bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting the Manhattan Transfer with Cascade, an ensemble of the Portland Gay Men's Chorus, Thursday, May 15th. Tickets for the Manhattan Transfer, May 15th at Aladdin-theater.com, and by Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning on KBOO, it's a special program on dismantling the prison industrial complex. At 9, it's a talk on mass imprisonment in prison slavery, Is Prison Slavery, by Jonina Abram-Irvin and Lorenzo Irvin, recorded this past weekend at the Law and Disorder Conference in Portland. At 10, it's the McLaren Youth Poetry Slam. At 10:30, hear a talk by Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the bombing of the Move House by Philadelphia police on May 13, 1985. And at 11 a.m., Prison Imperialism, How the U.S. is Spreading a Repressive Incarceration Model Around the World, with James Patrick Jordan of the Alliance for Global Justice. We're going to begin with our special programming with Mass Imprisonment Is Prison Slavery. More people are incarcerated in U.S. prisons and jails than in any other country in the world. With just 5% of the world's population, America has 25% of the world's prison population. In the following talk, recorded this past weekend at the Law and Disorder Conference in Portland, Jonina Abram-Irvin and Lorenzo Irvin explore how the war on drugs led to the current mass imprisonment of people of color, who comprise half of the over 2 million people incarcerated in U.S. prisons and jails. The talk also looks at how mass imprisonment has devastated poor and low-income communities of color, why mass imprisonment is slavery, and how to organize people of color to fight to end mass imprisonment.
This is the panel discussion on mass imprisonment is slavery. My name is Jonina Irvin. This is Lorenzo Irvin, and we will be talking about this topic for a while. We will definitely have time for Q&A, questions and answers people want to have, ask questions, have discussion. But our topic is mass imprisonment is slavery. And, you know, we're working from the basic premise that, particularly for people of African descent in the United States right now, prisons are the new plantation, the 21st century plantation for people of African descent. And obviously, there are a lot of Latino people who are held in prisons as well. But it is definitely, it is a form of slavery, and we're going to be talking about that. I want to start just briefly talking a little bit about what happened back in the 1970s. The Black Power Movement, the Black Liberation Movement that Lorenzo and I were both part of. Lorenzo was in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and we were both, later in the Black Panther Party, which was part of the Black Power Movement, part of that whole Black Liberation struggle. And what happened was the United States government, you probably heard of the counterintelligence program. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about COINTELPRO, but as a result of the Black Power Movement, the government decided that they were going to have to do whatever they could to stifle dissent, radical Black dissent in the United States. And they did a variety of things. The counterintelligence program was one thing that they did. But another thing that they did, too, that is not talked about as much, was the United States government began to introduce drugs into Black communities, Black neighborhoods. It certainly also happened in Latino, Hispanic neighborhoods as well. But initially, they were really looking at Black neighborhoods, because this is where the Black Liberation Movement had done a lot of work. And as I said before, they wanted to stifle radical political dissent. So we have the U.S. government to look to as for why all these drugs were brought into the Black community. They are the drug dealers. They're the ones that brought the drugs in to break up what was going on with the Black Liberation Movement. And of course, if you are addicted to drugs, you cannot struggle. You cannot engage in political struggle. You cannot worry about, organizing against police brutality or imprisonment or poverty or anything. Because if you're a drug addict, you want to be worried about your next fix. They knew that, and so that this is when they began this whole process. So when we're talking today about the so-called war on drugs, we have to go back to its beginnings in the 1970s. And there's a lot of material that's been written on that, and we don't have time to go into all of it today, but I just wanted to sort of get us started thinking that this whole process began in the 70s as an overt effort to crush the Black Liberation Movement. By the time Ronald Reagan came into office as president in the early 1980s, with his becoming president, the so-called war on drugs was really launched full scale, full force. And if you remember, even his wife had this, Nancy Reagan had this thing about just say no, you know. And this was 30 some odd years ago now, but I still remember it. And many people who are old enough probably remember it also. But when he came to office, this whole program was increased. And we began to start looking at longer prison sentences for people for drug offenses. It got particularly worse under Clinton. I'll talk about that in a minute. A lot of this began in the early 1980s when Ronald Reagan became president. And a lot of times, people who were arrested were not big-time drug dealers. You've got people who are in prison today who may have been arrested 20 years ago, and they may have had a fairly small amount of, you know, coke on them. What happened was that black people and people of color, other people of color, would get long sentences for having cocaine, and white people who might get arrested for heroin charges typically had shorter sentences. There was definitely racism in the way the sentences were put down. If you may remember, or if you have not, you can certainly do a lot of research on it online. In the 1980s, early 80s, you had in this country of Nicaragua, you had some counter-revolutionaries who were trying to topple, who were trying to compete with some Marxists there for control of the government. So what happened was the CIA started allowing, they were called the Iran-Contras, they were the counter-revolutionaries, allowing them to, you know, smuggle drugs into the United States. So we have the United States government actually being the drug runner, okay, bringing the drugs in. And, of course, they gave money to the Contras to fund what they were trying to do to defeat the liberation forces, the Sandinista Liberation Front at that time in the early 1980s. And, you know, I know I've talked about this before. I was talking about it one time to some young people, and they were looking at me like, oh, no, this couldn't be possible. I said, well, you know, all you have to do is go on the Internet and look all this up. I'm not making this up. If you don't believe me, that's fine. You look up Iran-Contra, there were congressional hearings, okay? And some of you may know this, but there were congressional hearings that revealed all this, all right? The United States was the drug smuggler running the drugs itself. And this was a big scandal that happened during the Reagan administration. And this was also the time when large amounts of drugs started coming into the United States, into black communities in particular. One of the places that got a lot of publicity was, of course, Los Angeles, South Central Los Angeles. And also, if you go on the Internet and do research, you will find the name. He was called Freeway Ricky, right? And he was a black guy who at that time was one of the largest, you know, cocaine suppliers in that part of the country, you know, in California, in that part of the United States. And when a lot of this, the Iran-Contra scandal came out in the public, the black community in Los Angeles was outraged. They had hearings there, accusing the government of bringing these drugs into the community, because what happens? You have people who are addicted to drugs, then you have an increase in crime, right? And that was the excuse that was used for these lengthy prison sentences, for these attacks on Black communities, Latino, Hispanic communities, other communities of color. We've got all this crime that we have to deal with because we have all the drugs. But they weren't telling the true story about how all the drugs got into the community. So they justified the crime. They justified their enforcement of stopping the crime by having these really lengthy prison sentences that have people, even now, the Obama administration is allegedly talking about shortening some of these sentences. Some of these people have been in prison 20, 25 years, and these were not people like Freeway Ricky, who I understand, I think, is out of prison now, isn't he? He's out. Mm-hmm. He was a big-time drug dealer. He really was dealing drugs. But you've got people who had much smaller amounts who basically were just users, maybe, who've been in prison 20, 25 years because of this so-called, you know, war on drugs. And really what it has amounted to, it has been a war on communities of color. That's what it is. It's not a war on drugs. It's a war on communities of color. And that's who has been destroyed by it, and that who has paid, those are the people who have paid the heaviest price for that, the communities of color. So this is what was going on through the 1980s.
And we're briefly interrupting programming right now because it's spring membership drive, and we don't normally do that. But this is a wonderful time where we get to interface directly with our listeners, with everyone in Radio Land. We're asking them to call right now, 877-500-5266. You're listening to the talk, Mass Imprisonment is Prison Slavery, with Jonina Abram Irvin and Lorenzo Irvin. This is signature programming. This is news you are not supposed to know, and that is what you have come to count on at your community radio station. Won't you call up right now, engage in a wee bit of checkbook activism by calling toll-free 877-500-5266. My name is Justin. I'm joined by Don, one of our stalwart volunteers. Welcome this morning, Don.
Hi, Justin. Thanks a lot. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, now, Don, you've been doing interviewing here. You know, when I think of all the thousands of citizen journalists we've helped empower coming in here, you're one of the people I've been seeing around doing a lot. How did you get involved, and how do we get the listeners involved in a little checkbook activism?
Well, when I found KABU, it was by accident, and I just happened to look it up on the internet. I came downtown, found it on 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, and I walked in and met the volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, and the station has since then been very welcoming. And the thing about KABU is it gives you the opportunity, not just because, you know, you don't have any experience in broadcasting or journalism doesn't mean that KABU won't train you in broadcasting and journalism. And there's all kinds of opportunities that you can have here at KABU, which is what makes KABU so unique and so special, listeners.
And that's why you call 877-500-5266. You know, we're giving away our signature product. That's our program, our broadcast, our stream. But I've been hoping that listeners will remember this is a proving ground, a training ground, where thousands upon thousands of people have received training to become citizen journalists, to become board operators, to air live music. And that's what people are supporting. That's what David supported when he renewed his membership from Vancouver. Thank you, David. Scott renewed his membership in Milwaukee. Thank you, Scott. And Jeff is a new member in McMinnville. We are so grateful to you all. Of course, people renewing their membership, that is so critical. But adding new names to the KABU Good Book, that is a special thing indeed. So thank you to you all. They're showing the way to the rest of you listeners. Dear listeners, won't you consider making a small contribution to the Commons, putting that money into a trust that stands here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue? You can do that online at KBOO.FM. You can do that from any wired box on earth. And that's why we're receiving emails from the Dakotas, the Carolinas, Pakistan, from all over the world. So please don't take that for granted. If you're closer to home, maybe you're up the gorge or down the Willamette Valley, or you're right here in Stumptown, call us right now, won't you? It'll only take a moment, and everyone will be happy that you did. Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
By the 1990s, when Bill Clinton came into office, we had what was called the Federal Crime Bill of 1994. And the Clinton pushed this. You know, a lot of people like to make out like he was this great, fantastic liberal president, right? Or even some people, I never understood this, some people call him the first black president. And I'm like, how? He's not black, so how can he be the first black president? I didn't understand that. But at any rate, under his administration, you had this federal crime bill passed, which expanded the sentences for people who were arrested for possession of drugs, greatly expanded them. According to one source, even the death penalty was extended for 50 additional categories of crime. So this happened under Bill Clinton's office, his administration, and it was particularly pushed through by the United States Senate. So that was 1994, so here we are in 2014. So we had these laws being pushed forward. You know, the devastation has been very bad on the black community. Just one example I give you. Lorenzo and I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and just last week, a 13-year-old kid was arrested for, it was a terrible, awful tragedy, but he shot his kid sister to death. Kids fool around with guns. They're in the home. They don't understand what they can do. He's 13. He winds up killing his 10-year-old sister, which obviously is a horrible thing. So the prosecutor there in Shelby County, Memphis is located in Shelby County, she says, we're going to prosecute this kid as an adult. Now, he's 13 years old, and we're going to prosecute him for second-degree murder, okay? He did not want to kill his sister. I mean, he shouldn't have had the gun. It should never have happened. We can all agree on that. But he wasn't trying to intentionally kill his sister. So the prosecutor says, I'm going to try him as an adult. We're taking him out of juvenile court. We're moving him to adult court. And he's going to be charged with second-degree murder. There was a lot of community uproar about this. And so the prosecutor had to back down. Number one, she's running for re-election. And she may need some black votes to get reelected. Okay, Memphis, by the way, is a majority black city, at least 65% black. 68% black, right. So the prosecutor, she's white, but she may need some black votes. So she backed down. Also, what's happened in Memphis is the federal government, the U.S. Justice Department, currently has the Shelby County Juvenile Justice Court system under review, because they were found to have engaged in gross discrimination against, you know, black youth and other youth of color in terms of the kind of sentencing they got. They don't have any legal rights. You know, if you are in Tennessee and maybe in a lot of other parts of the country, if you're a kid and you get arrested, actually adults may have more rights because, you know, kids aren't told what their rights are. This boy just sat and talked to the police. We don't know if his parents knew he was being questioned, whether his parents knew that they could get a lawyer in there, but there was no lawyer there. He just starts talking to the cops, right? And he now has a public defender who said he's going to try to get the so-called confession thrown out because he wasn't advised. This child had no legal rights. But this is what we're facing right now. You have these young kids who are being prosecuted as adults. And of course, those of you who live here in Portland, you have this 9-year-old black girl who was just arrested here recently for a fight at a community center. And, my understanding from the news article I read was that she was, I think, suspended or banned from the community center for a week, right? You might think, okay, that's substantial punishment. But then the police come up to her house, handcuff her, and take her to, down to the jail. She actually was. The newspaper said that. I didn't want to believe that, but it's true, right? Okay. So these are the kind of things that are happening, the criminalization of youth of color. They are being criminalized at a very early age. If you have a 9-year-old kid being arrested because the police said she didn't tell the same story about what happened in the fight she was in, she changed her story. Well, 9-year-old kids You know, they may do stuff like that, you know, they're kids. But this kind of thing that happened here in Portland, this thing with this 13-year-old kid, in Memphis, this is what has happened with the so-called war on drugs and after effect of that has been this criminalization of youth of color. That has been one of the really nasty side effects of it. That is what has happened. So these are concrete examples that we can look at. Just back a minute to the 1994 crime bill, which sort of put into place the policy of three strikes and you're out. If you're familiar with that, if you wind up with three felony offenses and you get convicted on the third one, then that means you go to prison for the rest of your life. That's three strikes and you're out. And a lot of people are in prison right now because they got to the so-called third strike. And unless some miracle happens, many of them will die in prison because they're not supposed to ever get out. So we had, beginning in the 70s, we had the government infusing all these drugs into communities of color. You also, the other time all this was happening, you had a growing, rising level of poverty and unemployment among people of color, all right? That's been on the steady rise. So far as the black community is concerned, black unemployment right now in America is at the highest level it's been since the Great Depression. And of course, nobody in this room was alive when that started, but my mother was. My mother's 94, and I've heard her talk about that, about the Great Depression. She was a little girl when it started. But in the black community, we had the highest level of unemployment since the Great Depression. And with this, you've had increasing levels of poverty. There's no job, so what do people do? Yeah, they may sell drugs. They may get involved in crimes. None of us likes that. I don't condone crimes. If somebody comes to our house to break in, to do a home invasion, we'll do what most people do. We'll defend our home. But we also understand why people are doing this. It's their economic reasons. They cannot get work. They have to survive. So unfortunately, they commit crimes, and they may get long prison sentences because of that, okay? So, and that's something that a lot of people don't talk about when they talk about the war on drugs, when they talk about crime. They don't talk about the rising levels of poverty and unemployment that are afflicting peoples of color in the United States. You cannot separate the two. They go hand in hand together. And until we seriously deal with poverty and unemployment in communities of color, people may and will sell drugs or do whatever they have to do to survive. That's just a reality, of whether we like it or not. And so we're going to have to deal with that.
And KABU is dealing with that today, the criminalization of the youth of color. We are doing special programming this morning. And right now you're listening to a talk by Jonina Abram Irvin and Lorenzo Irvin talking about mass imprisonment is prison slavery. And you're hearing it on the mighty 90.7, your community radio station. It's not being done elsewhere. And that's why we're briefly interrupting to ask you to show a little bit of support to make sure this work gets done. If we don't do it, folks, it doesn't get done. Call right now and start or renew your membership at 877-500-5266. Try going over to the right side of the dial and see how much talk there's going on about the prison industrial complex. I think you'll be back pretty shortly, friends. You can do that online, start or renew your membership at kboo.fm, or you can call us toll free, 877-500-5266.
We know this matters to you, and we don't ask why it matters to you. The only thing we care about is who are you, where are you, what do you want to get out of KABU's programming, and how are you going to help us support it? I mean, those are the only things we really care about right now, other than bringing you this kind of excellent programming. The thing about the programs like this, as Justin said, is you're not going to find this information anywhere probably right of 91.0 megahertz on your dial. The FCC has given frequencies below 91 the chance to air this kind of programming, and KABU has 90.7. And you can be guaranteed that every time you turn into KABU, you're going to find programming that you're not going to hear anyplace else. And the best way that you can support that programming is to call 877-500-5266.
That's right. And Don puts it square on the head there, because our mission is not to be popular. Our mission is not to pander. Our mission is to do what is left undone by other media sources. This right here is signature programming. Mass imprisonment is prison slavery. We're talking about it to make sure that the community has this information and can think about it and engage in some activism and some policy change. And while you're at it, a little bit of checkbook activism. It turns out that just pennies a day are what allows the entire community to have access to this information, real voices making real radio. Call right now, 877-500-5266. For this segment of our program, we have a $1,000 goal. That's very modest, because there are thousands and thousands of folks listening in Portland, in the metro area, around Oregon, and indeed all over the world through our stream at KBOO.FM. Maybe 9 of you could offer a modest $10 a month. That's just 33 cents out of the $2,000 a day it costs to keep this grand experiment alive and well. Won't you think about doing that right now? Maybe 18 of you could do $60 a year. That's 16 cents worth of responsibility out of the $2,000. Won't you call us right now? 877-500-KBOO.
I had a chance to talk to Robert King, who was one of the Angola Three a couple of months ago. And the way the Angola prison in Louisiana is set up is the way the Constitution in Louisiana is that involuntary servitude is part of the Constitution. And so the prison interprets that as slavery. And believe it or not, the same clause sort of exists in the Oregon Constitution. It says involuntary servitude and incarceration, or incarceration. So in a way, the same language exists in the Oregon Constitution. So it's really important, KABU listeners, that if you want to get involved in programs like this, if you are interested in social issues like this, it's really important to know that you're not going to really hear this any place else. And that's a fact. So if you want to support programming like this, if you want to learn more about programming like this, and if you want to learn more about issues that is the impetus for programming like this, you need to call 877-500-KBOO. 877-500-5266.
If you could start or renew your membership at the $60 level, we could send you the Prison Solidarity Package. That's several zines written by prisoners and former prisoners about solidarity and education on the prison industrial complex, including zines by featured speaker Coyote Chef, and that's going to include a set of note cards featuring the artwork of incarcerated artists. KABU has been doing this kind of programming for a long time. We have a program called the Prison Pipeline. We have often on many programs done shout-outs and received calls from people who are in the system. And we're asking you to make sure that service remains available, that the doors are open, that the lights are on, that the transmitter is functioning. Please don't wait for someone else to do it. You know, I'm not talking to the person who's driving in front of you, or the person in the next office, or the person who lives down the block. You're not that type. You're the type, you tuned in a long time ago, you're the type to help get it done. If that's $20 a year or $2,000 a year, it doesn't matter so much. What matters is that you stand up and get counted. Make sure your name is in the KABU Good Book. We're going to hand this back to this talk on mass imprisonment is prison slavery, but in the meantime, we're standing by for your call. Toll free, 877-500-5266.
So we're in a situation now today because of these different factors, that we have mass imprisonment. And many of you are well aware of the fact that no country in the world incarcerates more people than the United States of America. We have the highest level of incarceration. They can't even point to Russia. Russia does not have as many people in prison, or China, as the United States does. And a lot of this is because of these policies of the so-called war on drugs. These harsh prison sentences had put over 2 million people in prison. so far as black people in this country are concerned, we only make up 12% of the population, of the overall population, but we make up 40% of the prison population. So you think about that. 12% of the population, but 40% of the prison population. And together with Latino Hispanic peoples, we make up 60% of the overall prison population in the United States. The communities of people who have the greatest levels of poverty and unemployment. So that is why we have mass imprisonment right now. And, you know, if you can't employ people, then, you know, you put them in prison. You know, if you don't have anything else to do with them, we don't have jobs for them, so we'll just, you know, we'll put them in prison. That's what we'll do with them. We can't put them to work. Prison is where they're going to go, okay? So that's the situation that we face right now with this high level of mass imprisonment. And, you know, one of the things that has happened in the United States right now, people talk about the war on drugs, they talk about the high level of crimes, but we don't really have a movement right now in America to fight mass imprisonment of people of color. We don't have that. I mean, many of us are aware of it, but there's no real movement in the streets like there was, you know, 45 years ago to really deal with these issues. And obviously, we cannot go back 45 years. America is a totally different country now than it was then. You know, that was late 20th century America. Now we're now in, you know, early 21st century America. The reality of it is, for people of color, conditions are worse than they were then. Police brutality is worse. Poverty and unemployment is worse than it was 45 years ago. We can't go back to that time period, but we do need a movement in the streets, and we'll certainly want to talk about that. But we don't have that. That's why we have mass incarceration, mass imprisonment of peoples of color. So I'm going to stop at this point, and Lorenzo is going to pick it up.
Really? Okay. First of all, thank you guys for coming and hearing us. We appreciate that. If we were to look at the question, the additional question of mass imprisonment, we have to look at paramilitary policing because it was with the war on drugs that the police were actually given the enabling powers to create the paramilitary forms of repression. And this paramilitary policing has resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of persons due to no-knock raids, midnight incursions, and gunfights. I've gotten figures around 30,000 people have been shot and killed since the early stages of the war on drugs and the use of, you know, paramilitary policing. 30,000, you think about that. And looking at that further, this explains to you and I why we see the cases that we see of the police going around. Somebody said, well, the police are out of control. Well, they're not really out of control. They're out of your and my control, but they're not out of control. They are carrying out a program of police terrorism. It's almost like a dog. You got a mad dog and you know he'll bite somebody. And so you let him out. And he's going to go out and bite somebody. If he goes and bites somebody, that's fine because you can resist your authority. You can resist anything being done about it. And so this is what we're talking about with the police. They've been commissioned to carry out this type of policing in this period. It used to be that they had the so-called SWAT team, which is a small specialty organization within the police force. Well, everybody now is SWAT. You see police carrying weapons and body armor all the time, every day now. And when we have political demonstrations, what we see is this SWAT, essentially what is a goon squad, a paramilitary goon squad. We see that where they're in full body armor and they have military armaments and so forth. And many times they're riding on the back of an armored personnel carrier. We had a demonstration in Memphis where they had tanks, had a tank up there and a armored personnel carrier with a 50 caliber machine gun to stop us rioters against the Klan. They're gonna protect the Klan at the expense of gunning us down the street. I mean, so this is where we are at the moment in terms of, you know, the state and its paramilitary use of force. And this was all enabled by the drug laws. It's important to understand that. The drug laws enabled this. They allowed the police to have this kind of political control. They couldn't do this even during the political emergency that took place with the left in this country and with the black movement in this country. They still didn't have the authority, even when they used COINTELPRO, they didn't have the authority and the power to just bring in absolute, utter military, just beat everything down. And in fact, the Black Panther Party and other organizations were not necessarily beat down strictly with military force. There was also the political use of what we call now politicians, black politicians, and the ruling class elements in the black community, and every one of the communities of color, and all that. That's another thing, but that gives you an understanding of what I'm talking about. All right, mass imprisonment and the use of paramilitary policing, and I talk about the two of them in tandem, has resulted in the devaluing and deterioration of once vibrant black urban neighborhoods. Constant raids in the middle of the night, gunning people down in the street, people on drugs, and all of this have destroyed communities. In any other time, in any other place, they would call this a form of genocide. That's what they would call it. When you force a large majority of the population onto drugs because of social conditions and because of a deliberate plan of repression of a population of color or a social group. That's what they would call it. It would be called genocide. Now, mass imprisonment, and let's make no mistake about this one thing, mass imprisonment is racial / social control and oppression of the black population and other peoples of color in this country, and especially the Latinos and Puerto Ricans and other Hispanic peoples. It is a means of repression and racial control. Mass incarceration. Now, more Africans are in America, are under the control of the so-called criminal justice system today, you know, in prison, on probation, on parole. Add juvenile facilities to that, and mental hospitals as well. And more people are locked down or under the control of the state than were enslaved in slavery, chattel slavery in 1850. And slavery was the first U.S. racial caste system, and it was defeated in the Civil War. Then racial segregation, also known as Jim Crow, was the second U.S. racial caste system, and it was defeated by the Civil Rights Movement after 100 years. It took 100 some years to do it. And now we're at the stage of mass incarceration, and this is the third U.S. racial caste system. Now, there's nowhere else in the world, we're talking about the U.S., let's be clear, ain't nowhere else in the world they're imprisoning 25% of all the prisoners in the world. Nowhere else, not even close, not even a combination of countries. There's no dictatorship or bloodthirsty regime anywhere that can match the United States right now in terms of prison confinement. So we have to be talking about slavery. We have to be talking about a different form of slavery from chattel slavery with private owners and plantations. We have to be talking about a different kind of slavery, but we are talking about slavery. There's no question. We're talking about prison slavery. And today's slavery, whether it's done by private corporations, and let me be clear that private corporations haven't totally taken over the prison system in this country, but it's a substantial proportion of the prison regime. A substantial proportion. The first prison came out of the state of Tennessee. The first so-called private prison contractor, the CCA, as it was called, Corrections Corporation of America, which is publicly traded, still is, I suppose, publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And there is no question that they took over the institution in my hometown. In fact, we had the first demonstration, political demonstration, against a private prison system in my little hometown of Chattanooga. We had the first demonstration there. And it came, however, at a very bad time. They took over the prison system, and almost immediately a woman died in custody from a tubal pregnancy because the guard couldn't come and take her to the hospital. And the prisoners were screaming that she's sick, she's going into a coma, whatever. And the guard said, "Well, I'm not coming until I have my soup." And she died in custody, you know, and this is the kind of thing. And this caused the first protest movement against a private prison system there in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And from that, you know, we did a lot of other work against the prison system. I wanted to give you a feel for how this thing develops, what stage we're at right now when we're talking about slavery. This system, which affects primarily black and brown population groups, persons, whatever you want to call it, communities, is the result of a deliberate plan by the government, a deliberate policy by the government to, one, smuggle drugs or make drugs in government facilities, and two, to distribute narcotics, these narcotics, this crack cocaine, and at that time what they called it, and other drugs as well, because the United States government created the original Harlem heroin market. They worked with gangsters at the end of World War II, and they concentrated it in the black community. In fact, if you watch that movie, The Godfather, they actually say that. They say that they are going to concentrate, that we're only going to sell narcotics in black neighborhoods. They say that. They said it overtly. So the United States government created the drug trade. The United States government has created the paramilitary policing to take advantage of the drug trade and beat down the population, you know, which includes, of course, the possibility of another insurgent movement coming about in this period. So what we're seeing right now in terms of paramilitary policing and all this is as a result of enabling legislation from the so-called drug war, war on drugs. Mass imprisonment is the greatest source of destruction of black/POC families. Black imprisonment creates more poverty for families than anything else. And as I said, mass imprisonment has devalued entire communities. You're talking about thousands of communities all over the United States, you know, that have been destroyed as a result of the drug trade and as a result of government repression of those communities, hammering communities that are already vulnerable. So even though we're talking about what's happening to prisoners on the inside and that this is prison slavery, we have to talk about, on the other hand, what's happening to those communities they come from. Most of the time when people look for solutions and they talk about organizing, they don't think of organizing the communities where these people are from in the first place, or organizing their families, or and putting, you know, educating and mobilizing them to take on the government. And one of the things that we have to look at in this period that's happening is that people are blaming themselves or blaming each other for incidents or institutions like the drug trade.
And we're briefly interrupting this talk by Lorenzo Irvin and Jonina Abram Irvin in order to remind listeners in Radioland that it is our spring membership drive, and we're doing special programming right now. This is Smashing the Prison Industrial Complex. We're asking you to make a small contribution to the Mighty 90.7. You can do that online at kboo.fm, or you can call us toll-free, 877-500-5266. You know, knowledge is the first prerequisite for change, and that really is the business of KABU, getting this information into the community. It's certainly not done by the shrieking heads on Fox News or MSNBC, and people are responding. I want to thank Mark and Janet in Portland for renewing their membership. In fact, they are active volunteers here as well, so they are givers, just exactly the way KABU loves it. Ray from Gladstone came came in person to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and he has become a new member. We thank you so much, Ray. Just $850 to go to make this segment's program goal. Maybe seven of you could offer that 33 cents a day towards the $2,000 a day it costs. Call us right now, won't you? 877-500-KBOO. Knowledge is the first prerequisite for change, and that is the mission of KBOO.
I want to emphasize that, Justin. You know, this isn't to talk about the program better than the program can talk about itself. You know, but you have to ask yourself, is this the kind of country you want? Private prisons incarcerating for profit, blacks and Hispanics disproportionately imprisoned. I mean, you know, the first step in changing something is becoming knowledgeable. And that's what this is for. This is to remind you to support your education. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266, KBOO.
If you could start or renew your membership at the $75 level, we can do a couple of things besides say thank you and get you that membership card that's going to get you discounts at scores and scores of businesses throughout the area. We can send you the KBOO audio flash drive. That's got 4 gigs of information, and it's got all of the prison industrial complex special that we're hearing without Don and my sweet dulcet interruptions. It's got all of the programming from News and Public Affairs Day that happened last Friday. That's fighting the neoliberal agenda. It's got all of the talks on a way forward for Israel and Palestine. It's got Tom Hartman, and it's got more than I can actually list right now. That's a $75 gift when or more that you start. And not only that, when you make a gift at the 75 level or greater, a tree will be planted in your honor. And as I've been saying, not only will your KBOO membership whiten teeth, freshen breath, and melt away pounds, it will, in fact, lighten your carbon footprint. Please call right now. Give what you can to make sure that this vital community resource has what it needs to continue serving the community. 877-500-KBOO.
You can do it on a monthly deduction, on credit cards, or a debit card. You know, the staff here at KBOO numbers a grand total of 6. We have 500 volunteers, we have 4,500 members, and we have 45,000 listeners. Are you one of them? If you are, then you know what to do. If you want to keep this radio station going, which I know you do, you want to call 877-500-5266. Come on, get in the game.
That's right. It's about standing up and being counted. It's not even so much about the dollar value you choose to give. It's that you call in and renew or start a membership, that you stand up and be counted and make sure your name is in the KBOO Good Book. We're going to go back to this special programming on smashing the prison industrial complex, but we've got a couple lines open, and there's always room for more of you aboard the mighty 90.7. Call up and introduce yourself right now. 877-500-5266.
We have to lay this right at the foot of the government. The government created the drug trade. The government is responsible for police terrorism. The government, not somebody in the next door to you, somebody who's poor and looks like you, didn't have any money, or looks like me, doesn't have any money, and a poor enforcer to get out and sell drugs or whatever. But it's the government. The government is the drug dealer. You should say the White House is the crack house, you know. And so if we look at it like that, then we can understand. All these numbers of young black men go into the prison system in this period. When I first went to prison in the 1970s, now, you know, you could say that it was 70% white and 30% black. By the time I was getting out in 1983, it was 70% black and 30% white. And this change took place because of the war on drugs. Because of the war on drugs. And some people say that it was just Ronald Reagan did this. It wasn't Ronald Reagan as an individual who did this. It was the United States government who did this. The imperialist regime that did this. Who created these conditions. That this is a war. It's a war, a real war, not a figurative war. What are we talking about? You know, we're talking about a real war. So when we're talking about people crammed into the prisons in massive numbers, and the effects of that is still being felt, you know, It's being felt in the streets by them losing the ability. You know, families are being pushed into further and further into poverty, like I said. But it's also felt in terms of the conditions inside prisons, and they the harshness of them even more. You know, where it's seen to be a crime or something over the fact that you can use weights to you know, a weightlifting or something, or you shouldn't have any education, you don't need any, or you don't need medical care, let them die. You know, I mean, it's getting to that stage that we're talking about. But more importantly than anything, it's the political dimension of this, where these racist politicians, racist and corrupt politicians, are using crime as they have before, but are using crime and mass imprisonment specifically to justify it, to justify it. So when we talk about slavery, there's no question. If we look at what constituted forms of slavery in other periods, if we looked at the, like I said, chattel slavery, if we looked at then the period of what was called the Southern peonage, or the period when institutions like Angola and Parchman Prison and others in the South particularly, but all over the South, the workhouses, they call them workhouses, and the chain gangs and all this stuff, we looked at that. These came about as a result at the end of slavery. Slavery was purportedly over with, but the white racist regime still existed, and they created new forms of servitude. And so they stuck people and got new forms of labor, slave labor, out of them through the prison system. And then this is passed down to us now. We are at a stage with industrial labor from prisoners where they make billions of dollars. Private corporations make billions of dollars with factories behind fences. And in addition to that, I made allusions to, you know, the private corporations that make money from administering prisons, And they make billions of dollars. And they even get billions more now because they got they've cornered the market on imprisoning immigrants, so-called illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants. They're making massive amounts of money, and it's in their interest to lock people down. And they're locking down tens of thousands of immigrants now in the United States. So if you looked at all this stuff, you know, you couldn't fail but to understand, first of all, who's being locked up? You know, who's being locked up? Is black people, brown people? The conditions of how they're being locked down, the draconian sentences, the long periods of time people are serving in prison, and the long periods of time people are serving in solitary confinement now, you know, 10, 20 years. The United Nations says that 15 days is torture. So when you reach that stage, you're torturing people. So I think that the racial dimension of this, mass imprisonment as racial injustice, you know, many times it's presented as an outrage, but not necessarily racial injustice. It is racial injustice, and it is structural racism. They've built a system that, in its very essence, is a racist institution. Is a slave institution. They're paying people, if they're paying them at all, they might pay them less than a dollar a day to do work that out here they'd have to pay you $10, $15, $20 an hour. Some jobs inside prison, when I was in prison, they were making guided missile parts for cruise missiles. Well, first of all, none of the prisoners was going to get out and go to work at any military plant anyway. But the point is, they would have to have paid them $25 to $50 an hour or more to assemble those parts on the outside. But they could get that work done on the inside with prison or slave labor. They could get it done for less than 80 cents on a dollar, you know. The United States has more prisoners than anybody. Knowledge can be dangerous sometimes. Knowledge can put you to sleep, but knowledge can also put you to work. And we want to put you to work. We want to get you to think about and to help us build a new movement in this country that is opposed to structural racism, white supremacy, in the form of the state use of mass imprisonment. We want to, and prison slavery. We want to get you organized to where you are educated yourself and can start talking about this, because even many prison activists don't know anything about it or don't do anything about it. So we're talking about getting people organized to do things about it, you know, to do something about it. It's bad enough to say, well, all we're going to do is what we've been doing for the last 30 years. We need to do more. We need to do a hell of a lot more.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
Yes, and that is the sound of people being educated through Radio University. KABU, the sanitizing light, shining a light on this information. Knowledge being the first prerequisite for change. That's what we're asking you to get on board with right now. How many people in this community have been impacted by the prison industrial complex? Maybe you can make a small gift in order to make sure this information is getting out to the community. It's the first step in social change, folks. Call us right now. Get on board. Stand up and be counted. 877-500-KBOO. 877-500-5266.
I want to emphasize this. If not now, when? If not you, who? I've talked to a lot of judges, and they say nobody is prepared to engage the justice system or the prison system when they hit it head on. It's important to try to avoid it at all costs, but if you have a loved one who has, then programming like this helps them by helping you get aware. And the way that you get aware is to support, and the way you support is 877-500-5266.
We're doing what we can try and do to make sure that this information gets out to the entire community. It's empowering. It's enraging. It motivates social change. And that is part and parcel of the KABU mission, to make sure that all of the different unrepresented, all of the different neglected and controversial are all getting a voice. You're not going to hear that for the shrieking heads on Fox News. Won't you call us right now, 877-500-5266. $60 gets you the Prison Solidarity Package. These are zines and note cards and artwork from those incarcerated. $60 gets you that. $75 gets you our audio flash drive with all of today's talks and a huge amount of talks that you've been hearing during this membership drive. 877-500-5266. Have you done what you can do today? Just a little bit of checkbook activism. As we've been hearing right now, the prison industrial complex gets billions and billions of dollars. We're doing this on far less than $1 million a year. Shall we have what we need, or shall only they have what they need? 877-500-5266.
They would be perfectly glad to see KABU go away. They
and
would.
We are never going away. We are that sanitizing light. We are shining that light. But the only way we're able to shine that light is because there's power going to that light. And like it or not, folks, in this kind of society, how you spend your money little bit says something about the world you intend to live in. So you can give a little money to make sure that the entire community is made aware of the prison industrial complex engaging in institutional and structural slavery. Who else is going to do that for you? 877-500-5000. KBOO. We've got just about a minute and a half and several hundred dollars to go. You know, everyone's doing their part. The volunteers are here answering phones, working the board. Restaurants are giving food to make sure that we have what we need to keep answering those phones. Tabla Bistro, thank you. 200 Northeast 28th Avenue. Thank you. Karam Restaurant, 515 Southwest 4th. Have you, dear listener, done what you can do? Everyone else is doing their part. Won't you do it right now? Several hundred dollars to go to support this talk. A mass imprisonment is prison slavery. This is exactly why KABU was created. Won't you make sure that we're strong and able to continue serving the population? 877-500-KBOO.
We can do it on monthly deduction on credit cards or debit cards. For a $75 minimum pledge, you get an audio flash drive that has some great stuff by John Nichols, Tom Hartman, W.E.B. Du Bois, just an incredible collection of stuff from the KABU archives.
No one's doing it like we're doing it, and we can only do it because of your help. Listeners in Radioland becoming members, becoming citizen journalists through their training, or just engaged in a little checkbook activism. Pennies a day, nickels a day, dimes a day gets it done. We're grateful for everyone who's called and for everyone who's moving to their phone right now. I thank you in advance. We'll be back in a little while to check. We're continuing our programming on the prison industrial complex, but everyone hopes that you will call right now. 877-500-KBOO.
Thanks for listening, and thanks, members, for supporting KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. We are listening to a special program on dismantling the prison industrial complex. At 10:30, hear a talk by Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the bombing of the Move House by Philadelphia police on May 13, 1985. And at 11, Prison Imperialism, How the U.S. is Spreading a Repressive Incarceration Model Around the World, with James Patrick Jordan of the Alliance for Global Justice. The next segment of our special programming focuses on the McLaren Youth Poetry Slam. In April 2014, the Verbal Escape Poetry Group at McLaren Youth Correctional Facility held its first Poetry Slam competition. Local and national slam poets performed along with the McLaren Youth and also judged the performers. The event was coordinated by Dakota Kennedy, an Oregon Youth Authority volunteer, along with McLaren Youth, Sang and Noah, and Kathleen Fullerton from Hope Partnership. The event was recorded by Carlos Chavez of KBOO's Prison Pipeline. Prison Pipeline is heard every Monday, 6:30 to 7 p.m., Prison Pipeline's hosts rotate weekly. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Underage drinking and smoking, claiming to be paper chasing. Hearts void